Resurrected Republic, Truth Radio Broadcast, on RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth. Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen. Today, I want to talk to you about something we've talked about in the past, but I think is again one of these subjects that gets kind of pushed to the back burner. A lot of people who aren't directly affected by it dismiss it easily, which is the biological warfare programs initiated by with the Germans, the Soviets, the United States, and the outbreak of disease that broke out in Connecticut and has since spread through much of the United States. This program examines the possibility that Lyme disease may have spread as a result of clandestine experimentation on biological warfare on Plum Island, a Department of Agriculture facility that doubled as an Army biowarfare research facility. It's dedicated to the study of animal diseases, it was at the time. Plum Island appears to have been the site of experiments with disease-infected ticks conducted by Nazi scientists who brought the United States under Project Paperclip. One of the Nazi scientists who appears to have been involved with Plum Island, evidence continues to corroborate this, was Dr. Eric Traub, who was in charge of the Third Reich's virological and bacteriological warfare program in World War II. Now, keep in mind, I don't really view at this point, at this level, the activities of the German government, the Soviet government, or the United States government by being very different. And a lot of immorality was going on in all three, and the UK, and Israel, after the fact. Of course, we see this happening. And what do we do about it? Usually we complain about it and we're ignored. Official lines come out to obfuscate the truth, and again, it gets buried in an endless sea of watered-down news programs, giving just the validity enough by covering it to not lose all credibility whatsoever. So Traub, who was in charge of the virological and bacteriological warfare program in World War II, of course, then came to the United States. So the program highlights include examination of Traub's studies in the U.S. prior to World War II, Traub's pro-Nazi activities inside the United States, and I suggest, folks, that Traub may not have been a Nazi at all. He may very well have been a communist. He went to work for the Soviets after the fact. Now, it's easy to say that he could have been under threat or coercion, but as the Soviets and their mind control programs and the CIA and its mind control programs does not mean that whether by hook or crook he became a Soviet sleeper agent. And, of course, this is very implausible, knowing everything that we do know about the clandestine services and all of the interesting drugs and control tactics that are used. So John Loftus's discovery of references in the National Archives to the scientists experimenting with disease ticks on Plum Island, Lyme disease activist Stephen Nostrom's discovery of Loftus's findings in his work investigating Plum Island, details of Traub's involvement with Plum Island, and many other things that we're going to cover today. In order to understand how Eric Traub came to the United States, it's important to understand Project Paperclip to begin with. The program begins with a synoptic account of the project and how its prosecution led to Traub's entry into the United States and his involvement with Plum Island. Nearing the end of World War II, the United States and the Soviet Union raced to recruit German scientists for post-war purposes. Under a top-secret program codenamed Project Paperclip that we've talked about many, many times on this show, the U.S. military pursued Nazi scientific talent like forbidden fruit, bringing them to America under employment contracts and offering them full U.S. citizenship. Guess you can't really know their mind or their hearts, though. Just their talent might have been, a red flag as to their loyalties. by giving them access to these facilities. That's just, you know, food for thought. The recruits were supposed to be nominal participants in Nazi activities. And it really, whether they're Nazi activities, German activities, we bombed the crap out of their country. I can only say as an American, I really don't care what country it was. If you bombed the crap out of me, I would hold some sort of grudge. I'd feel some kind of way about it. So let's pull the politics of all this stuff out and who's good and who's bad and all of that and just look at common sense. Common sense says when you destroy somebody's country, well, and then they go to work for the Soviets, that might just, be a red flag. So under the Project Paperclip, the U.S. military did pursue them. The recruits were supposed to be participants in the activities, but the zealous military recruited more than 2,000 scientists, many of whom had extremely dark pasts. Now, Lab 257, the disturbing story of the government secret Plum Island germ lab by Michael Christopher Carroll, it's been, criticized harshly by establishment sources. However, there's a lot of evidence within the book released by HarperCollins to suggest that there is where there's smoke, there most probably is fire. But again, the government is very good at suppressing this information. So American scientists viewed these Germans as peers and quickly forgot that they were on opposite sides of a global war. And how does this all affect us? Well, this affects me very personally. When I was a young boy, I contracted Lyme disease long before we knew what it was. I was around, I believe, 12. And as I progressed on, I started experiencing joint pains, lethargy, foggy headedness, short-term memory deficit issues. By the time I was in college, and I had been an extremely bright student, by the time I was in college, I was drawing blanks at my examinations. And my criminal law professor brought me into his office and he said, I just can't understand it. He said, if I sit here and talk to you about this, it's like you have total recall, but you sit down and take the test and you go blank. And I had no test-taking anxiety. I wasn't worried about the test, wasn't stressed out over it. But come to find out all these years later that this was one of the effects. I was later subsequently diagnosed with stage 4 chronic Lyme. Now, why that's important, and for those of you out there that have family members who have either been diagnosed with Lyme disease or have a lot of the symptoms of Lyme disease, I hear the same complaints about family members, stressed relationships, accusations of lethargy or sleeping too much or not being motivated enough, the inability to do certain activities because of the pain. When you're not wearing a cast or you're not physically in a wheelchair, which I've been twice in my life and also in a coma in a hospital due to the effects of this disease, when people aren't there to see these things, it's very easy for them to become extremely judgmental and not realize what it is that they're doing. And what they're doing, what you end up doing is trashing somebody who's essentially disabled by what I suspect to be a biowarfare program run amok. Whether it was intentional, whether it was not intentional, whether it was misfeasance, whether it was direct malfeasance, whether it was a conspiratorial attack, population control. I feel kind of like, in a way, like saying what Hillary Clinton said. At this point, what difference does it make? Most of the people that were involved with it back then are dead, and most of the information is classified, again, being kept from the American public. Why, if, like, you know, like the government tells us, like we hear from Homeland Security, who, by the way, is now running Plum Island, if you don't have anything to hide, then what are you worried about people discovering? So anyway, this has greatly affected my life in many ways. It's really stressed out family relationships. There have been times where when it takes me, I'm down for a week at a time sometimes. That hasn't happened to me for a while, but then again, you know, there have been periods of time, long periods of time, and then it'll just it bang, it comes on like a truck. There's not really much I can do about it. I'm trying a couple natural things, natural remedies, but I haven't had any long-term real success in completely knocking it back. And I've tried many things that listeners have called in with, and you know, I'm not saying that these things are not possible or not, you know, they can't work. But you know, I'm still working on it. I'm a work in progress, so I'm still open-minded to trying many different things. But to give you an idea of, and I'm not one of the worst sufferers of chronic stage four. I know people who have complete MS-style nerve attacks. They can't walk. They're in wheelchairs, which, like I said, I've been a few times. IV antibiotics pulled me out a few times, knocked it back. But when this crosses the blood-brain barrier, it seems to be very, very difficult to cure. And the problem with this is that the government has suppressed treatment by normal means of just issuing antibiotics. Many doctors, and this is not just in the United States, but in Canada as well, doctors feared treating for this because their government agencies were coming down on them, threatening to take their licenses away. Well, what is that? You're treating somebody with nothing more than antibiotics. I mean, it's not a narcotic. It's not a controlled substance. So there's so much more to the story that's not really, really covered. Now, you get in a little bit deeper. You know that Traub was also, you know, he's involved in live germ trials. He studied in the United States before the war. And a lot of people don't know this. At the Rockefeller Institute. And had been involved in Nazi activities inside the United States prior to 1939 or the outbreak of World War II. Traub also listed his 1930s membership in America with a K, Deutscher Volksbund, a German-American club also known as Camp Siegfried, just 30 miles west of Plum Island in Yaphank, Long Island. Camp Siegfried was the national headquarters of the American Nazi movement. Ironically, Traub spent the pre-war period of his scientific career on a fellowship at the Rockefeller Institute in Princeton, New Jersey, my home state. How wonderful we were for getting him, I suppose, huh? So Traub spent the pre-war period of his scientific career in New Jersey, perfecting his skills in viruses and bacteria under the tutelage of American experts before returning to Nazi Germany on the eve of war. Despite Traub's troubling war record, the U.S. Navy recruited him for its scientific designs and stationed him at the Naval Medical Research Institute in Bethesda, Maryland. Nominally under the jurisdiction of the USDA, Department of Agriculture, Plum Island was also used for military biological warfare research on animal diseases. In that regard, it was involved with Fort Detrick, the Army's top chemical and biological warfare facility. Traub was the foundation of Plum Island Biological Warfare Nexus. Just months into his paperclip contract, the germ warriors of Fort Detrick, the Army's Biological Warfare Headquarters in Frederick, Maryland, and CIA operatives invited Traub in for a talk. Later reported in declassified top secret summary, Dr. Traub is a noted authority on viruses and diseases in Germany and Europe. This interrogation revealed much information of value to the animal disease program from a biological warfare point of view. Dr. Traub discussed work done in German animal disease station during World War II and subsequent to the war when the station was under Russian control. Traub's detailed explanation of the secret operation on incel reams and his activities there during the war for the Soviets laid the groundwork for Fort Detrick's offshore germ warfare animal disease lab on Plum Island. Traub was a founding father of this. So it's interesting to note that the Third Reich's biological warfare program had the cover name of a cancer research program. That's, probably news to you guys. The National Cancer Institute Special Viral Cancer Research Program, the evidence suggesting that the project was actually a front for the continuation of biological warfare research. And come to think of it, they do toxify just about every cancer patient with chemicals that end up killing them. Just food for thought on that, when we know so many other things can be tried before toxicity is entered, such as Rick Simpson oil and various tinctures and their natural remedies. They should come first, quickly, when someone is diagnosed with cancer. But so anyway, he appears to have been involved with the projects related to the SVCRP. Everyone seemed willing to forget about Eric Traub's dirty past, that he played a crucial role in the Nazis' cancer research cover program for their biological warfare program, and that he worked directly under SS Reichsfuhrer Heinrich Himmler. They seemed willing to overlook that Traub in the 1930s faithfully attended Camp Siegfried. In fact, the USDA liked him so much it glossed over his dubious past and offered him the top scientist job at the new Plum Island laboratory, not once but twice, just months after the 1952 public hearings on selecting Plum Island. Doc Shahan dialed Dr. Traub at the Naval Laboratory to discuss plans for establishing the germ lab and a position on Plum Island. Okay. So a little bit more about how he became a significant part of Plum Island. 6 years later, and only 2 years after Traub squirmed in his seat at the Plum Island dedication ceremonies, senior scientist Dr. Jacob Traum retired. The USDA needed someone of outstanding caliber with a long-established reputation internationally as well as nationally. Sure, working for our enemies. Jeez, I mean, do we have a habit of working with our enemies and calling them friend or what? So anyway, to fill Traum's shoes is why he was pulled in. But somehow it couldn't find a suitable American to take this role. As a last resort, it now proposed that a foreigner be employed. The Aggies' choice, Eric Traub, who was in their view the most desirable candidate from any source. Why? Well, I think it's kind of obvious. 1958 secret USDA memorandum justification for employment of Dr. Eric Traub conveniently omitted his World War II activities, but it did emphasize that his originality, scientific abilities, and general competence as an investigator were developed at the Rockefeller Institute in New Jersey in the late 1930s. So thank you. Thank you, Rockefeller. Really appreciate that. Thanks for that. The push to employ Traub as the director of Plum Island involved professional recommendations. Traub declined the offer to lead the lab. There is considerable evidence that he was involved with the biological warfare research there. But declining the USDA's offer, Traub continued his directorship of the Tübingen Laboratory in West Germany, though he visited Plum Island frequently. In 1960, he was forced to resign as Tübingen's director under a dark cloud of financial embezzlement. Traub continued sporadic – a wonderful guy, right? Traub continued his sporadic lab research for another 3 years and then left Tübingen for good, a scandalous end to a checkered career. In the late 1970s, the esteemed virologist Dr. Robert Schoep on business in Munich paid his father Richard's old Rockefeller Institute disciple a visit. The germ warrior had been in early retirement for about a decade by then. He said he had dinner with him. He died unexpectedly then in his sleep in 1985. He was 78 years old. A biological warfare mercenary who worked under three flags, Nazi Germany, the Soviet Union, and the United States. Traub was never investigated for war crimes. Not there, not here, not anywhere. And in fact, all of our outcry, all of the information that has come forward about this, you would think if the government actually existed to preserve and protect our freedom, there would have long ago been an in-depth investigation. That should speak volumes. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast. We'll be back after a few words from our sponsors. Welcome to the place of the left's hypocrisy.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigRelief migraine formula. MigRelief is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigRelief for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
Extendivite really works. Just listen to what some people have to say.
About 6 months ago, my wife bought Extendivite. She didn't tell me she was giving it to me. So after about 3 days, I said, maybe the weather's changed or something. I said, my legs feel really good. And she goes, well, I've been giving you this stuff, and it was the Extendivite. And you know that I'm about 75% better. I can actually climb stairs now, and I can get up out of chairs. I can even get down, and, I got to work under a table or a computer table and work on a computer. I can actually get back up off the floor. You know what? It's an amazing product. I can't believe I didn't think anything short of having surgery was going to help.
Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid. Call now. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Hey, hey, Resurrect Republic Truth Radio broadcast. For those of you listening on Spreaker, you're about to lose your feed. Please go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on Listen Live. We've had some technical difficulties that were unavoidable. We will be loading the show into Spreaker shortly after so that we have a preserved podcast both on our website as well as RBN's in the archives. Sorry about that. We were just trying to deal with that on the backside here. These things happen. So now let's see where we were. Okay. Thank you, Dan. So this biological war mercenary. An important chapter in the story of how the inquiry into the possible link between Plum Island, Eric Traub's work on behalf of the U.S. and the spread of Lyme disease concerns the work of former Justice Department prosecutor John Loftus. In his book, The Belarus Secret, Loftus referred to work done on Plum Island in the early 50s in which Nazi scientists were experimenting on disease ticks might have referred to Traub. Attorney John Loftus was hired in 1979 by the Office of Special Investigations, a unit set up by the Justice Department to expose Nazi war crimes and unearth Nazis hiding in the United States. I guess unless they worked for the communists and I don't know. It seems like this guy was given a real pass, but Loftus found a treasure trove of information on America's post-war Nazi recruiting in 1982, publicly challenging the government's complacency with the wrongdoing. He told 60 Minutes the top Nazi officers had been protected and harbored in America by the CIA and the State Department. They got the Emmy Award, Loftus wrote. My family got death threats. Old spies reached out to him after the publication of his book, The Belarus Secret, encouraged that he, unlike other authors, submitted his manuscript to the government, agreeing to censor portions to protect national security. The spooks gave him copies of secret documents and told him stories of clandestine operations. From these leads, Loftus ferreted out the dubious Nazi past of Austrian President and UN Secretary General Kurt Waldheim. Loftus revealed that during World War II, Waldheim had been an officer in a German army unit that committed atrocities in Yugoslavia. Now, I don't know what happened in Yugoslavia. I wasn't there, and I really do need to look more into that. But a disgraced Kurt Waldheim faded into the international scene soon thereafter. He just disappeared. So in the preface of The Belarus Secret, Loftus laid out a striking piece of information gleaned from his spy network. Even more disturbing are the records of the Nazi germ warfare scientists who came to America. They experimented with poison ticks dropped from planes to spread rare diseases. Let me say that again, folks. They experimented with poison ticks dropped from planes to spread rare diseases. So when people call us conspiracy theorists for suggesting that a government facility run amok might be more culpable than anybody wants to admit, we're not the kooks. Just saying. We'll be back. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on RBN.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. owner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Mother of the moon, which filled my sails, crossed the sea of years.
Welcome back, Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on RBN. This is your host, Tom Lacovara-Stewart. Folks, this is something that is near and dear to my heart and what really kind of really did start me down a alternative research road that led to many things. Anyway, the clip that I'm going to share with you right now will speak some volumes. And Dan, if you have that first clip queued up, okay, cool. Hear a little bit of this. And if you want folks that you, those of you who are in the chat room, the Resurrect the Republic .chatango chat room, because we're moving, I am on limited bandwidth here. I can't do all of the things that I need to do and be in the chat room. So if you guys are there, a shout out to you. If anybody else wants to go in there, and you can go to rtrtruthmedia.blogspot.com and click on the chat room button and it'll pop up. So I urge you to do that. And if you have any comments or questions, please feel free to call in at 1-800-313-9443. If you feel like making some sort of statement, we try and stick to the subject matter. But anyway, check some of this out. Go ahead and roll that clip.
February 1956. In the heart of New York, Operation Big City was underway. A Ford Mercury, specially adapted with a hidden exhaust pipe, pumped out bacteria onto the streets of Manhattan. Undercover agents entered the city's subway system, their cases equipped with tiny motors, which covertly dispersed the bacteria Bacillus globuli. 10 years later, the army returned. Light bulbs filled with bacteria were dropped in front of trains and down ventilation shafts to test how far the bacteria would spread through the subway system. For years, these public experiments were kept secret from the citizens of New York. The Army faithfully filmed its own experiments. This Washington, D.C. bus station was the site of another secret test. 30 similar trials were conducted at public locations all across America. One of the earliest experiments had fatal consequences. In 1951, the Army sprayed the bacteria Serratia marcescens over San Francisco. 11 hospital patients developed a mysterious infection. And within days, Edward Nevin died from an illness caused by the same bacteria. In 1953, CIA employee Frank Olson leaped through his bedroom window on the 10th floor of this New York hotel. 9 days earlier, a fellow CIA scientist had secretly spiked his drink with LSD. It took the government 22 years to acknowledge its role in Frank Olson's death. Another cover-up concerned the death of a civilian, Harold Blauer. Suffering from depression, he was a patient at the New York State Psychiatric Institute. There, he and five other patients were unwittingly tested with mind-altering drugs by doctors who'd signed a secret contract with the U.S. Army. Again, it was more than 20 years before his family discovered the truth.
In 1975, I was living in California with my two children. There was a knock on the door, and two people in uniform were at the door. They said they were from the Pentagon. They wanted to talk to me about the death of my father. And I told them that my father had been dead a long time. They came in and they told me that they had found papers at the Edgewood Arsenal in Maryland. And these papers had information about my father's death.
It took Harold Blauer's family 15 years of fighting the government in court before a judge's ruling established the facts.
On January 8, 1953, between 9:53 and 9:57 a.m., my father was injected with 450 milligrams, or 6.47 milligrams kilograms of body weight, of EA1298. According to the drug study notes, at 9:57, my father became very restless and had to be restrained by the nurse. He began sweating profusely and flailing his arms wildly. At 10:01, he pulled up in bed, his body stiffened, his teeth clenched, and he began frothing at the mouth. Similar reactions continued for over an hour. My father was still talking and moving his legs randomly at 11:05. Finally, at about 1.5 hours after the injection had begun, my father lapsed into a coma. He was pronounced dead at 12:15 p.m.
Biological testing involving human subjects by the Department of Defense. And in here, talks about the initial capacity for producing bacterial agents was later expanded to include capabilities for producing toxin in addition to viral and rickettsial agents and the unique capacity for growing and infecting mosquitoes with viral agents.
So there's a bioweapon was Lyme disease.
Oh, they've been playing with all this stuff. Yeah. That's where West Nile came from.
Yeah.
They did all the studies in here. And this is interesting because they go into a restaurant and take a hypodermic needle and inject LSD into the wine bottle. You sit there and have your dinner.
And that was when?
This is
Human drug test?
The CIA, yeah.
1977?
Yep.
Okay. And what?
Everything, there's so much in here, it's just...
How'd you get that report?
It's requisitioned.
Requisitioned how?
People just got their hands on it.
Oh, yeah? And, that's probably on the internet, right?
Yeah, not the whole thing. You can get parts of it. Like the 103rd Congress is biological chemical weapons we sold to Iraq.
Yeah.
That's when he was at war with Iran, firing missiles and weapons and killing over 1 million Iranians, but now we got to go after them.
Well, it would be interesting to get that some of that as a PDF or whatever file.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for holding this committee meeting, and again, thank you for the very nice introduction. You've heard today that there are many problems in the field of Lyme disease, and I wanted to address one of the core problems that you may not be aware of. Some have called this the Lyme disease conspiracy. There's in this country a core group of university-based Lyme disease researchers and physicians whose opinions carry a great deal of weight. Unfortunately, many of them act unscientifically and unethically. They exert strong, ethically questionable influence on medical journals, which enables them to publish and to promote articles that are badly flawed. They work with government agencies to bias consensus meetings and have worked to exclude from these meetings and scientific seminars those with alternate opinions. They behave this way for reasons of personal or professional gain and are involved in obvious conflicts of interest. Some of them are known to have received large consulting fees from insurance companies to advise the companies to curtail coverage any additional therapy beyond their empiric 30-day course. This group promotes the idea that Lyme is a simple, rare illness that is easy to avoid, difficult to acquire, simple to diagnose, and easily treated and cured with 30 days or less of antibiotics. The truth, however, is that Lyme is a fastest-growing illness in this country after AIDS, infectious illness after AIDS, with a cost to society measured in the billions of dollars. It can be acquired by anyone who goes outdoors, very often goes undiagnosed for months, years, or even forever in some patients, and can render the patient chronically ill and even totally disabled, despite what this core group of physicians refers to as, quotes, adequate therapy. Long-term studies on patients who were undertreated or untreated demonstrated the occurrence of severe illness more than a decade later, reminiscent of the findings of the notorious Tuskegee study. Following the lead of this group of physicians, a few state health departments have now begun to investigate in a very threatening way physicians who have more liberal views on Lyme disease diagnosis and treatment than they do. And indeed, I have to confess that today I feel that I am taking a personal risk, a large one, because I'm stating these views publicly for fear that I may suffer some repercussions, despite the fact that many hundreds of physicians and many thousands of patients all over the world agree with what I'm saying here today.
They were working with it when it mysteriously popped up, and it can cause death. I have death certificates and a whole bunch of papers at home on that. But this one is United States Patent Office, and this is an invention, the pathogenic mycoplasma for Mentins incognitus. Now, this one is patented by the Department of Defense. Many people say that this is what the Gulf War illness, that's what these guys are suffering from, because they all have the mycoplasma. In fact, 70% of any chronic illness in the world, I guess, has the mycoplasma infection. If you're chronic, whether it's MS, lupus, Parkinson's, whatever. The next page is a PubMed article. Another strain of mycoplasma was made. This was made from everybody's favorite island, Plum Island. And it's highlighted. You'll see that on your TV. Plum Island worked with mycoplasmas. They worked with infecting ticks. They've done everything you could imagine. This one I may not be able to put on the screen, but it'll be on the website. This is a UTSA, $10.6 million lab. They're going to be working with biowarfare agents. They'll be working with such diseases as anthrax, tularemia, cholera, Lyme disease, desert fever, and other parasitic and fungal diseases. Now, Lyme disease is listed with some of the most deadly pathogens known to man. Another one, the CSU, biological warfare, says some season will call what they're working with spooky microbes, infectious bugs, and weaponized biological agents. Among them, anthrax, SARS, avian influenza, tularemia, encephalitis, West Nile virus, Lyme disease, chronic wasting disease, plague, yellow fever. It just goes on. So what's the attraction with this Lyme disease if they tell you it's a cakewalk? It's so easy to get. So easy to cure, I'm sorry. Now, this is New England Journal of Medicine. They wouldn't even respond to me. But I have a paper here, The Long-Term Course of Lyme Arthritis in Children. The natural history of Lyme disease is not completely known. We studied the long-term course of Lyme arthritis in 46 children in whom the onset of disease occurred between 76 and 79 who received no antibiotic therapy for at least the first 4 years of the illness. Now, they're using the excuse that they didn't have a test. They didn't know what it was at that time. But the lab, I just showed you the lab they were working with, knew about it in 1975, 74, whatever. Down below, it says all 46 children had positive IgG antibody responses to Borrelia burgdorferi throughout the illness. So that's the Lyme bacteria. They tested positive for it. And later on, the people got sick. Later on, lingering, they had IgM responses. Were significantly higher than the IgG titers. Another reason why the CDC doesn't want to use the IgM. You can Google, I won't put this on the screen, you can Google this one. This is the Tuskegee timeline. Go into Google, type in Tuskegee timeline. This is an experiment that the CDC did on the black Tuskegee soldiers. This went from 1932, ended in 1972. And the experiment ended when they died. When they died, the experiment was done. And when this came out, the news media finally caught on to it. Now that we're talking about Plum Island and experiments and whatever, the next thing on your screen is a paper from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They were investigating a man named Eric Traub. Eric Traub had bought some land in Maryland. He was putting fuel tanks in, underground fuel tanks. I believe he had a generator. And if you read this, they were concerned that this guy was working to help overthrow the United States government. They felt that he was ready to help if there was an invasion into this country, that you would have fuel and radio and whatever they needed on this farm. So the next page, FBI, they're talking about, excuse me, they again installed more gas tanks, underground tanks. Subjects reported to have built a large home near the Frank DuPont estate, which has an airport. So they were concerned about that. The second next page is they're talking about Eric Traub being extremely pro-Nazi. So here's a guy that they were afraid was going to overthrow the United States government. The FBI, CIA were watching him because he's extremely pro-Nazi. Here's the papers that they brought him into the country to work at Plum Island. His job there was one of the main things he did was infecting ticks. So this is the requisition to get him from Germany to the United States. Keep in mind, this is a guy that they're afraid is going to overthrow our government. They put him in charge of biowarfare in Plum Island. The next one is his photo, the National Defense Program, his photo, and his fingerprints when they brought him into the country. This is interesting. As you can see on your screen, I posted a $20,000 reward in 2003, I think. I canceled, but I pulled it in 2006, 2007. But it was interesting to see the emails that were generated. Again, thank you, Chris Newby, for the Freedom of Information emails that she filed, which took 5.5 years for her to get them. They had to censor everything. And in there, they're talking about the $20,000 reward. They were upset with me because I posted a reward. The only reason I did that was hoping the news media would say there's got to be something going on here. This guy's putting up 20 grand saying Lyme is not easy to cure. And I was really hoping the news media would do something, but they didn't. That was a big failure. So Hank Fader, we demanded that Hank Fader show us the test that they used to diagnose Lyme to say that Lyme is cured. That's why we were out there. We wanted him to come up with a sign. I'm sorry. My brain's a little tired. They wanted him to come up with a sign, paper, document, whatever, explaining that Lyme is easy to cure. See what they're using, because we've already proven the Western blot is nothing. So this is from Phil Baker about the $20,000 reward and the protest at UConn. Why not take this as an opportunity to challenge them to provide unequivocal evidence to show those who believe that they have late chronic Lyme actually have a persistent Borrelia infection? Well, Phil, does it really matter if you have a persistent infection or chronic Lyme? That's like calling somebody a chronic alcoholic or a drunk. You still have an infection, and you don't have a test to prove it. So you can't use the word chronic Lyme is not real. Here's one from Henry Fader from UConn. I think the key is to not debate the chronic Lyme disease science with the patient. We cannot prove the patient does not have chronic Lyme disease. So he's admitted we have no test. This is from Derlin Fish. This is a good one. This is how you treat your taxpayers. The battle cannot be won on a scientific front. Derlin Fish is admitting they don't have the science. We have the science proving that Lyme is not easy to cure. There's no test for it. The battle cannot be won on a scientific front. We need to mount a socio-political offensive, but we're outnumbered and outgunned. We need reinforcements from outside the field. That's a nice way to treat the people that are paying taxes. And this one is also from Alan Steer. There's one point that I would like to emphasize in untreated patients. He means people that weren't treated immediately, which is 80-90% of the people, because your doctor can't see a positive test, you don't get treated. Alan Steer says, there is a chronic form of Lyme disease that commonly results in Lyme arthritis or in rare cases, Lyme encephalitis, Lyme, neurological Lyme.
Until that covert biological warfare problem, even after We'll be back, Resurrected Republic, radio broadcast on RBN. Lyme disease, biowarfare, and you.
This is the most transparent administration in history.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
Welcome back. Welcome back, Resurrected Republic Truth Radio broadcast. I'm your host, Tom Lacovara Stewart. And folks, like I told you and you've been listening to, these issues created by Lyme disease. I ended up in a coma in a Miami hospital. My family was called. My mother was called and told to get there quickly from New Jersey, that they didn't think that I was going to make it through the night. My aunt, Robin, who contracted Lyme disease, was also fell into a coma and has suffered all sorts of effects. Their animals, their dogs, their hunting dogs got Lyme disease. This is a horribly disabling, crippling disease. And if people don't understand that when you look at somebody with Lyme disease, because you may not see a crutches or they may not be in a wheelchair, it's very easy to dismiss
these things, especially in light of the resistance from the medical establishment. So anyway, RT ran a piece on this. Now, let me do a disclaimer when it comes to Russian television. I don't trust Putin as far as I can throw him. He's ex-KGB, the same reason that I didn't like Bush, ex-CIA. These intelligence agencies don't seem to be working for us at all, and they haven't for a long time. At least that's my assessment of it. So when I share a piece with you from RT, it comes with a disclaimer. I do not support or condone all of the content by journalists that I share. When I do share a clip, it is only that clip that I am sharing with you and endorsing to any extent. So I just want to make that clear ahead of time. So, Dan, if you would roll Abby Martin.
According to the CDC, Lyme disease is the fastest growing insect-borne infectious illness in the United States. In fact, in the time it takes you to watch this show, 17 people will be diagnosed and potentially face a lifetime of physical, psychological, and economic suffering as a result. So here to discuss the growth of the disease and why it's largely ignored by the medical and scientific community is the CEO of LymeDisease.org, Lorraine Johnson. Thank you so much for coming on, Lorraine.
Thank you for having me.
So for those that don't know much about Lyme disease, can you first explain what it is, how it's contracted, and how many people we're talking about here that have it?
Well, Lyme disease is contracted through the bite of a tick. So if you're out hiking, you may be exposed to ticks. Ticks can transmit Lyme disease. They can transmit a number of other diseases at the same time. And the CDC has, until recently, said 30,000 people a year contract Lyme disease. Just this year, they revised their estimate to 300,000 people a year contracting Lyme disease. And just to put that in perspective, that's six times the annual rate of HIV/AIDS. So it's really quite a crisis right now.
What caused that extreme disparity in their previous reporting?
Well, their surveillance methods are really barriers to counting cases. They don't count laboratory tests straight out. They don't count physician diagnosis straight out. They have a number of steps that you have to go through in order to become a surveillance case.
We will return with Abby Martin's presentation, Resurrect the Republic, Truth Radio broadcast on RBN.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now so afraid of being called racist that we were quailing towards irrelevance and extinction. Join the American Freedom Party today. Reach us at theamericanfreedomparty.us or call us at 701-317-5317. Paid for by the American Freedom Party.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.